The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
With great mojo comes great responsibility. Mojo 5-0. Mojo 5-0.
We will make America great again.
Sam Sorbo.
Show. I'm your host, Sam Sorbo, here on Mojo50.com and also where fine podcasts are podcasts. So please do tell your friends about the show. I really appreciate any passing on of the word. Ben Roethlisberger's in the news. I'm not sure why, because his name takes up the whole headline. I'm kidding. We'll get to that. Doctors are raising alarm as well. And we're going to talk about redefining the pro-life movement, or even the definition of pro-life. Before we do that, I want to talk to you a little bit about the COVID insanity that's going around. There's a meme now. It's actually funny. The disambiguation of the coronavirus, or the COVID-19, or the SARS-CoV-2. The virus is only active during certain times of the day on beaches. It can also travel up to 6 feet, but it cannot travel 6'1" or greater. It can go through the air and on all surfaces except anything that comes in the mail or groceries, for instance, that you take home. The virus doesn't go to places like Walmart, Target, Amazon, or other large corporations and grocery stores. But it does like bars, small businesses, and especially churches, where apparently inside churches, it can travel up to 9 feet if you're parked in a car. The virus cannot live on food taken to go because it only stays inside restaurants. It's all very confusing, I know, but hashtag science. That is a meme that's going around. All right, and now we'll get to my first guest. Hayden Lugwood joins us. He's an investigative researcher for Capital Research Center. He's uncovered some very interesting plans that the Democrats have made? Do we really think that this is a contrived effort, Hayden?
I prefer the term schemes. It gives you the right image of what they're really doing.
Excellent.
Yeah, what we're really dealing with here is a multi-decade-long campaign by professional left-wing activists to redefine pro-life, basically to expand it to include everything that left-wing environmentalists want to have. You know, everything except for what it actually means.
Okay, so they're taking the pro-life movement, but they're sort of, they're hijacking it in a sense and convincing people who are pro-life that they need to be pro-environment as well, and therefore basically embrace, like, the Green New Deal?
Kinda, yeah. So if you think about it, it's actually a very clever way of getting through their policies without you being the pro-life Christian admitting that they're right, right? So what they do is, instead of fighting the pro-life movement or just Christians in general and convincing them they need to believe in global warming or they need to adopt, you know, more government regulations, instead they call this creation care. And it's basically a way for them to slide on all positions that, say, the Sierra Club or Greenpeace or any radical on the left would adopt, to slide it into this new banner they're calling pro-life, in the idea that it's stewardship of God's natural resources and the created order, when in reality, there's nothing biblical about it. It's all basic left-wing politics by groups that, if they presented these things honestly, most conservative evangelicals would oppose them.
What? How dumb are the conservative? I'm sorry, I shouldn't have said that. But, I mean, hello? My problem is, even within evangelical circles, you have evangelical young women sitting in abortion clinics saying, well, no, I'm evangelical. I believe in God. And but abortion is just, you know, that's just part of the life cycle or something. I'm not even sure how they justify it.
Well, I think people should trust their judgment, right? If it looks and smells and sounds left wing, it probably is left wing. In my experience, the left is very clever. This is all the Capital Research Center does, is trace money to activists from big donors. And so my first inclination is looking at some of these groups. I'll give you an example. The Evangelical Environmental Network, EEN. It's about as lefty as it sounds.
Oh, okay.
If you look at their donors, all their big donors are major foundations on the left. You know, where the biggest one is the Energy Foundation. It's based out in San Francisco. The Energy Foundation is basically a major pass-through set up by bevies of big left-wing donors. Soros is one of them. And they move money into this organization, which then moves the money into other organizations so that they can say, well, you know, we have no connection to these major left
right,
donors.
Right.
In fact, that's where all the money originates.
Yeah, I see. So I've seen this before also. So, for instance, in Minnesota, well, we don't even have to single out Minnesota. There are a couple of religious groups that are very pro-immigration. And they are very much involved in getting new settlers to come to the United States and settling them places. And they operate under the guise of the church, but they aren't really the church. They're really immigration people who are making a lot of money doing the resettlements. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely.
So basically, you've got an organization that chooses to call itself evangelical as a way of passing itself off to unsuspecting evangelicals. So, for instance, if I go to Starbucks, I know now that my money goes to support abortion if I go to Starbucks. And Starbucks doesn't advertise that, but they don't keep it a secret either. They support Planned Parenthood. So now I know that when I spend my money at Starbucks. But if I'm just donating money and I get a thing from the Evangelical Environmental Agency and they're telling me, you know, part of God's plan is for humans to steward the planet and that's what we're doing, send us money. Yeah, I guess I might be duped into sending the money, right?
Yeah, and people shouldn't be confused by this. Right? Conservation is a different thing from environmentalism, right? I mean, I've never met anybody who doesn't want clean air or water, and we already do those things very, very well. But environmentalism is an ideology created by and will always live on the left, right? It's basically anti-human in its outlook.
There you go, yeah.
Which is why it's so pro-abortion. You can't make these things up. And it really is as nefarious as it sounds. So there's another group you should know about called the New America Foundation, or just New America. They released a report a few years ago, and it basically outlines everything I'm telling you about how these professional activists are trying to target conservative Bible-believing Christians for infiltration. And so they actually had this multi-hour-long discussion on here's how evangelicals think, here's what their political priorities are, how do we break them away from the Republican Party? And that's pretty political. I mean, a 501c3 tax-exempt organization should not be engaged in questions having to do with breaking away demographics from political parties. And these guys have bragged about what they've tried to do, that Evangelical Environmental Network. It actually targeted Billy Graham's old magazine, Christianity Today. You know, used to be a pretty conservative Christian magazine, and now it takes positions on pretty left-wing political issues all the time, including the environment. If you look up creation care on Christianity Today, you will see gobs of articles, and they read just like something the Sierra Club would publish.
Wow. And so you said that they are targeting pro-life groups as well.
Yeah. If you think about it, infiltration works best if you get the other side to think that your ideas are their ideas. And so you put it right on there. It's stewardship, right? Well, okay. I mean, we can quibble over the terms. But basically, there's really nothing in the Bible that has to do with carbon dioxide emissions or greenhouse gases. These things are in the realm of politics, and they belong in the realm of politics. And what the Bible has to say about what man can and cannot do to his environment and the earth around him, it's pretty specific and it's pretty limited, and it belongs in that certain sphere.
Oh, phooey. I'm sorry, guys. I'm not sure what happened there. You know what? I'm going to get Hayden back on the line because that was unfortunate and entirely my fault. And I'm not even sure how that happened, frankly. But we'll get Hayden back on the line. I'm so sorry.
I'm here. No problem about that.
That was very odd. And I honestly don't know how that happened. But anyway, so they're getting Bible believing Christians to sign up for not stewardship, but environmentalism.
Yeah, and you know that this is true when you read the all the slogans they use, right? One of the common things I hear from the supposedly pro-science crowd on the left is that carbon dioxide, you know, the stuff that you breathe out, that plants breathe in, that it's a pollutant. Well, that's nonsense. It's not a pollutant. It's necessary for life on Earth, just like oxygen couldn't be a pollutant because it's necessary for life on Earth. It's totally not man-made. It's an organic thing.
Right.
Well, if you see what these groups say, they use the talking points of the anti-science left, but they'll slap a vaguely Christian veneer on that. You know, if you insert the word God in there, suddenly it becomes a Christian thing, even if what it's saying is nothing to do with Christ or the Bible.
Well, I'll tell you something, Hayden. I tell this story to people, and they often, the response typically is, I was talking to a young woman, a Christian, was going to a small Christian college, and she made friends with one of her professors who she eventually figured out was clearly an atheist. And one day at lunch, she said, "I don't understand. You're an atheist, but you're teaching at a Christian school. I mean, this is a Christian school." And the professor said, "Oh, well, this is my mission field." Her mission field, she's targeting Christians so that she can draw them away from the faith. And
it's militant atheism.
Right. And Christian schools are not even aware that they are hiring professors with this kind of outlook. And then the problem, of course, is there's an imbalance in power. And so the students show up for class. They need to get along with the professor because they need the grade. I mean, this is how it's gone, sort of, it's gone on for this long and it's gotten this bad because the students won't turn in the professor because they got to take the class. They got to get the grade. They don't want to rock the boat. They don't know better. They, you know what I mean? We're sending Christians to college today completely unprepared to deal with the challenges that they face in a largely secular culture, right?
Well, you have to be a little suspicious when somebody's trying to sell you something like this. It's just, we should train our children to be skeptical and ask good questions. And, you know, you don't have to be trained in a scientific degree to have some understanding of these things, right? I certainly wasn't. I'll give you an example. Everybody who goes through school has heard about the scientific method. It's just how we test things, hypotheses, to come up with, are they roughly true or not?
Not
right?
anymore, but yeah, go ahead.
Not anymore. When you hear somebody telling you consensus, right, 97% of such and such believe in such and such, if you're using the word believe or consensus, it has nothing to do with science. It has everything to do with a kind of religion of its own, if you will, right?
Yeah.
It's more of a cult attitude.
Exactly.
You know, that should set alarm bells off in everybody. You don't need to go any further than that to know that you're dealing with somebody who's trying to sell you on something, but for whatever reason, maybe they're cowardly or maybe they're lying, they're doing so wrapped in the blanket of something they think you're going to buy. And that should make you pretty skeptical.
Yeah. So what do you have an example of a pro-life argument that would take a pro-life person and make them sort of renounce that, or is it
Yeah, no, it's a good question. It kind of comes down to who might be gullible enough to be swooed by this, right? You know, no, I think people who really genuinely understand pro-life is a very specific thing. When you say you're pro-life, it means you have a certain understanding of when life begins in the womb and you consider it sacred. I mean, it's just that kind of simple definition. If you're adding into it, you're probably not pro-life. You're probably at the very least confused about your definition to be charitable, right?
Right.
But I'll tell you this, the groups that I have read that were people who were supposedly swayed by these kinds of arguments, you hear arguments that just fall apart on their own. One of them I really love is mercury poisoning. The argument is like this. Everybody knows if you ingest a lot of mercury, right, it's lethal. It's a toxin. Okay, but mercury is also something that is exposed in trace amounts when you burn things like coal, right? So a lot of these groups will say, well, obviously, we're going to create a bunch of birth defects because if you burn coal, it's going to release mercury into the air. Well, despite the fact that the EPA and loads of other accredited organizations have done studies on this and found that actually, no, it's so small, it doesn't affect you in any harmful way. No baby is getting a birth defect in the womb from mercury released by a coal-burning power plant.
Right.
There's groups out there that will say, well, clearly the only pro-life thing to do to avoid birth defects is to ban all coal. You know, clearly we need to get away from fossil fuels because it's creating these birth. Well, that's just ludicrous. That is jumping from
right.
One
don't you care about the
thing.
Children? Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
exactly. And so you have to look out for these simple arguments that are really, they fall apart when you start to examine them for about 5 minutes. But so no, I would say if you really have a skeptical eye, you're not going to fall for these things. Of course, you and I wouldn't. But you can't take it for granted that these groups that call themselves evangelical or even conservative are either of those things.
Right. Hayden Ludwig, it's great to speak to you from the Capital Research Center. Why don't you give the good folks a website address so they can find you?
Sure. We have loads of information on this at capitalresearch.org. That's capital with an A-L.
Right. Capitalresearch.org. And it would be a great summer project to do with your kids if you're still stuck at home from COVID. You can look at ways that the left is trying to subvert and co-opt the right. I think it would be clever to do some research there, how to spot a fraud. Hayden, thanks so much for coming on. We'll talk to you soon.
Thank you very much.
All right. So, when I read that, it just sort of caught my eye. I'm like, they're doing what? But of course they are. That's what they do. All right. So Ben Roethlisberger, who plays for my beloved Steelers, I say that fairly facetiously because I don't really watch football. But he swore after he injured his arm that he wouldn't shave until he could throw a football as well as he ever could, basically a legit NFL pass to one of his teammates, he said. And he wasn't going to cut his hair. And then, of course, COVID came, and he wasn't allowed to cut his hair. Well, apparently he's healed enough because over the weekend he went and cut his hair, and he posted a video. Roethlisberger is shown in a stylist's chair with his hair cut and someone using scissors to touch up his neatly trimmed beard. Well, guess what? The Governor Wolf of Pennsylvania is not happy about it and criticized him. Wolf was then asked whether the salon would receive disciplinary action, whether the state would investigate the matter. He answered in a typical political or politician manner, quote, "My concern is just a general concern. Anybody who puts himself or herself into harm's way is something that I think we have to try to avoid. When you go to something like a barbershop and you're not protected, I don't care who you are. The chances of that virus actually wreaking havoc on your life increases. You see, it's all for your protection. It's just to protect Ben Roethlisberger. Why don't you tackle him? Tackle him before he gets into the shop. Make sure he doesn't go into that very, very dangerous COVID-infested barbershop." I'm sorry, folks. I'm just fed up about this. I am so fed up. In fact, somebody tried to take me to task on Facebook. I posted the thing from Jensen. Is it Senator Jensen? And he tells a story about his friend, former patient, I guess, who he found out committed suicide. And he was deeply upset and deeply moved. And so I posted his video basically saying we need to get back to work. The mask thing is, you know, do the mask thing. I don't care. But let's get back to work because there are repercussions from shutting down the economy. There are risks that we are courting with the shutdown that are different, but just as viable as any risk of COVID. And in fact, probably more so at this point, seeing the results of COVID. So I posted, it's an abomination. Folks, we need to get back to life now. More cancellations in July. They keep canceling. They keep looking into the future. And then 6 weeks, 8 weeks away, 10 weeks away, they cancel. So the question is, when will it be safe? And the answer is never. life has risks, and staying home does not prevent them. Staying home carries its own risks. Plus, you get to choose because we live in a free society, supposedly. And so I urge people to call their representatives. I said we need to be free to get the U.S. back on track. Other countries are successfully now. And so somebody got on and said, hey, you live in a big house. You have a big yard. It shouldn't be that hard for you to stay isolated on your property because you can do the stuff that you do remotely. That's not true. All my speaking engagements canceled. And folks, that's where I make my money. Like, that's my living, is traveling and speaking to large groups of people. Thank you. So I'm not doing that. And then she's giving me tips on what I can do with my spare time. Thank you very much, as if I have any spare time. But thank you for your concern. She goes, and then, of course, she takes me to task. She'll go, oh, you can spend time posting things. Why don't you just spend time posting things? And I used to want to watch movies with you, but now I don't know because your religious propaganda films, blah, blah, blah. And you're not essential. Oh, and she literally went so far as to tell me that I'm not an essential business because somebody died and made her queen of the United States. And then she said, okay, bring on the insults, as I realize most of your followers will vilify me for this post. Sorry, folks, I support science. To which I replied, well, happily, there were a number of people who replied on my behalf, taking her to task, which was very nice. But I could not help myself because I was up very early this morning. One, you think you know about me? I no longer live in that house that you Googled. So congratulations. Number two, I am not complaining for personal reasons. My heart breaks for all the folks who are losing everything right now because some statist decided they are non-essential and their lives should be aborted. Number three, you claim science is on your side. Social distancing is not proven. There are no tests on whether social distancing is at all effective. It was made up by a high schooler. It was adopted without testing. Oh, just like Common Core and whole word reading, both of which have failed generations of students. There's no research behind it. And by the way, you've already been exposed to the virus, and there is no way to avoid it. It's a virus. Or did you think if we all lock ourselves in, it will pass us by like the angel of death on Passover? The studies have proven conclusively that masks are actually more of a hindrance than a prevention of disease for healthy people. Number four, you've lost sight of the truth and operate only from fear. The shutdown, may I remind you, was to prevent overwhelming our medical system from a surge in cases that never even came close. We never came close. We never came close. I can't reiterate that enough. Okay? We sent a ship to New York. Didn't use it. We converted the Javits Center. Didn't use it. There was a whole hospital, field hospital, set up in Central Park. Barely used. And by the way, there's a report out now that Democrat states are doing much worse from COVID. Many more deaths per capita, basically, from COVID in Democrat states than in conservatively governed states. So I said, the CDC just changed the guidelines again. Did you see that? The new guidelines are, well, it doesn't actually stay on surfaces, so you don't really have to worry about the surface-to-surface sort of contracting it. It's nothing, it's honestly like nothing they say is ever accurate. And yet still, we believe them. Even Dr. Birx said, I don't trust what I'm discovering off the CDC. And yet we're still following. We are losing hospitals and healthcare workers. People are committing suicide because of the lockdown. 600 doctors just sent a letter to Trump to beg him to open us up to prevent further injury because, quote, downstream health effects are being massively underestimated and underreported. And our food supplies are being disruptive. So I said, don't you care about others? Do you want to see people starve? Or are you just so self-absorbed that you only think about what you believe, unscientifically, I should point out, to be best for you? It sounds like you're doing fine at home. But there are millions who are suffering right now for your false sense of security. And then I got some very nice comments on that, which was very nice. And then I got somebody saying, mistake, you are 100% wrong, which is so scientific. Yeah, you're just wrong. Blah, 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 blah. It's nasty. It's very nasty. And it does make me sad because we're actively harming ourselves. Do you ever have a friend who harmed him or herself like a lot, like would always put himself down, spoke negatively about himself, or maybe worse, actually harmed himself? And there was nothing you could do. You were like, man, I really care about you. I wish you wouldn't do that. Drink yourself to death, or that's what I see. I'm sorry. So, Governor Wolf, according to a report this week from Governor Wolf's, this is in Pennsylvania, own Department of Health, most of the COVID-19 deaths in the state occurred among patients 80 years old or older. Typically, they have comorbidities, which means they already are very compromised. They are sort of circling the drain, as we say. They contract the disease, maybe because Cuomo ordered that COVID patients be admitted to nursing homes. And I just saw a headline that he's like not even apologizing for that. He's actually blaming Trump. Well, we had to admit them to nursing homes because Trump. Apparently Trump trumps everything. Just all you have to do is say Trump. And that it's really sad that we have become so bifurcated. And I'll tell you, I know why. And the why actually makes me sad. The why is because there are certain people who value life, and then there are people who don't. And the left are the people who don't. And so you get comments like this, like, Sam, just shut up and stay in your fancy place and stop imposing and stop. Well, basically just shut up and stay in your fancy place because I know what's good for me. And therefore I know what's good for everybody else because everybody else has to serve me. That's a leftist. That's somebody who doesn't value life, doesn't want an external opinion unless it agrees absolutely with what they think. And I'll tell you, I have a friend. No, you know what? I'm not going to tell that story.
After leaving a message, you can hang up or press pound for more options.
Okay, that didn't work. So I have my guest trying to reach me, and for some reason, it's going straight to voicemail. And it's going straight to voicemail, and not maybe he'll pick up this time. Cross your fingers. Okay.
Hello?
Yes, I'm calling for Gordon Chang.
Yes, we tried calling in.
Yes. Well, we're on the air right now. Can he come to the phone?
Yes, he is right.
Excellent.
Hi. Hello.
Well, good morning. We are live on the air, Mr. Chang, and it is a pleasure to speak with you. This is Sam Sorbo from The Sam Sorbo Show. Gordon Chang is the author of The Coming Collapse of China and also The Great U.S.-China Tech War. His Twitter handle is Gordon G. Chang, at Gordon G. Chang, I should say. And we're going to talk today with this expert, because he is an expert, and I've been following your writing for years now. But now that China is in the forefront and we've got the coronavirus that we're dealing with, and Xi Jinping addressed the World Health Assembly. And by the way, so let's start there. Tell us who the WHO is. Do you have a take on that?
Yeah, the World Health Organization is a UN body. It's global in scope, and it's supposed to promote world health. However, it has extremely close ties with Beijing these days because of its director general, Dr. Tedros. And China has been manipulating the WHO in ways that have actually undercut world health. President Trump has responded by defunding the organization pending a study. And this is going to be a controversy going forward because China says that it's going to up its contributions to the body and try to take it over even more than it has in the past.
Is it time for a new world health organization, like a new one, a different one?
This is what President Trump has proposed, and I think that this idea is a good one. It's no doubt, Sam, that the doctors and the professionals of the WHO do great work. But the problem is that their great work is nullified by the political leadership of the organization. Just to give you an example, we heard from Dr. Maria von Kerkhoff, who is a WHO doctor. She knew from the get-go that the coronavirus was human-to-human transmissible. But in an April 13th press conference, WHO press conference, by the way, she said that her concerns were nullified, just ignored by the senior leadership. So WHO sent out, for instance, its January 14th tweet to the world saying that coronavirus was not human-to-human transmissible. And that, I think, lulled public health officials around the world into not taking precautions that they otherwise would have adopted, which means that the WHO basically has been acting as an instrumentality of China, undercutting world health, actually helping to spread the virus around the world.
Yeah. And I mean, you kind of said it all in your very first sentence, that it's a UN body and the UN leans predominantly communist. So why would we expect anything better from the WHO?
Well, we shouldn't. And this really is a problem in general across multilateral organizations. They work well if they are not unduly influenced by the totalitarian and authoritarian states. But unfortunately, in the UN system, every country gets a single vote in the General Assembly. And that means you have Beijing actually spending a lot of time getting allies around the world to support its malign objectives, which means that they undermine the effectiveness of all of these UN bodies.
So I know you lived and worked in China for many years, and I've been a critic of our business dealings with China for many years. It just never sat right. And I'm a novice, like I don't really know what I'm talking about much, but it never sat right with me that we were actually conducting business with a communist dictatorship. Where do you fall in regards to that?
Well, your instincts were absolutely right. You know, what we tried to do for four decades was to engage China, to sort of hope that as it became richer and stronger, that it would become benign. But that, I think, was unrealistic. It became much more belligerent, much more provocative, much more dangerous. So
it's almost like they see us as weak.
They see the United States in terminal decline. And they believe that they can manipulate American public opinion to get what they want. And so, in a sense, they understand how strong America is, but they also believe that we cannot exercise our strength.
That we can't because we don't.
Well, we can't because there are so many different constituencies in the U.S. that we have what they would consider to be a divisive political system. And, you know, generally speaking, we've had elites in this country actually buy into many of the Communist Party narratives for their own personal profit. I mean, they were perfectly entitled to do that. But what it did was it weakened the United States. It's been an issue of leadership.
Yeah.
We've had presidents who've accepted American decline as a fact. Now we've got a president who doesn't believe that way, who believes that the United States is strong and should defend itself. And thank God for that.
Right. So I can only imagine you're referring to the islands in the South China Sea, for instance, when Biden flew over there ostensibly to speak to them and negotiate with them so that they wouldn't be conducting threatening exercises in the South China Sea and et cetera, right?
Well, yes. You should mention that, first of all, in the Obama administration, they had horrible South China Sea policies. Also, we should point out that President Obama had a predecessor. His name was George W. Bush, whose policies in many ways were worse than Obama's. So we've had, this is not a partisan issue. This is not Republicans and Democrats or liberals and conservatives. We've had bipartisan failure in this country for a very long time, which is the reason why China was able to grow so fast, so strong, because they were aided by America in, I think, a misguided policy, which was accepted across the board. Now that's no longer true. Now we understand the folly of what we did, and it's important for us to make sure we don't go back to policies that vitally undermined our own interests and the interests of the free world, for that matter.
So I'm going out a little bit on a limb here. I think that there's a certain aspect of the coronavirus that's a blessing in disguise, and what you just alluded to, in the sense that maybe now we realize how misguided we have been. Trump ran on China. He ran on renegotiating the trade deals with China and becoming more competitive in the world. And with COVID, that's all been put in jeopardy. But at the same time, it's certainly highlighted the danger that the dangers that we are already in because of China's usurpation of trade or manufacturing, maybe.
Yeah, I wouldn't disagree with that. What's happened is we have learned how malicious the Chinese political system is because of the coronavirus epidemic. And because of that, we are now starting to move to policies that make far more sense. And this is important because we are throwing away the ideology of engagement, which I think help China grow to a point where it could actually threaten the United States in many ways. We're in an existential conflict with Beijing. There's only going to be one survivor. It's either going to be the United States of America or the People's Republic of China, not both. And we need a president who is going to decide that it should be us. In the past, we've had presidents who have helped an enemy.
Yeah. But it sounds like you're more woke than most of Washington, I have to say. And I know that you said that it's not a political issue because Bush also had a very favorable attitude towards China and his predecessors, right? I mean, Nixon's the guy who opened up China. So in that respect, it doesn't fall on one side of the aisle or the other. But I have the feeling that now it does, because we have people in Congress who are actively advocating on behalf of China.
Yes. Well, they're certainly propagating Chinese lines of narratives, and they're doing it because they believe that they need to oppose Trump no matter what he does. But the unfortunate reality for them is that the Americans, all of us, have a common enemy. That common enemy is unrelentingly attacking us. And at least until noon on January 20 of 2021, there's only one person who can defend the American Republic. So we all have an obligation to get behind him. But I'm not saying that you got to vote for the guy on November 3, but I'm saying as long as he's the only person who's going to defend us. And this is an existential struggle. So if we Americans can't unite, we're going to lose our republic.
Where do you think? Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
It's just one other thought, and that is that our republic is at risk, much greater than most people think. We can lose everything. So we've got to get together and unite.
So I wrote a piece that's up on the Epoch Times called Slay the Dragon, which basically likens the CCP to a dragon that must be slain in order to save the princess freedom. So I'm on board with that. But where do you lay the blame for, I don't know, what do we call it, a slide into complacency with China, a misrecognition of their intentions? They're waging a propaganda war currently, and I don't even know if we're really awoken to that yet.
Yeah, I mean, we're not. I mean, I think that as time goes on, we're going to learn more about what Beijing did to spread this virus beyond China's borders. And as we do that, I hope that we will come to a realization that we've got to unite and band together. But, you know, it's clear that China took steps that would inevitably lead to the spreading of a disease around the world. And Chinese leaders had to know what they were doing. So this is, you know, a critical issue for us because, you know, we have 93,000 Americans who have died from coronavirus. They were killed by an enemy. And these people would be alive today were it not for the attack from China.
Mm. That's sobering. Okay, just to, I don't want to keep you too long, but I do want to touch on Huawei and 5G. Can you just explain to the audience, because this is something that's sort of been a little bit under the radar. Trump has made some news with it, so it has hit on some people's radar. But what is happening with Huawei?
Huawei Technologies is the world's largest manufacturer of telecom equipment. It is Chinese, and it's essentially an arm of the Chinese Communist Party, although it says it's not, but it in fact is.
But every business in China is, right?
Almost every business. There are private businesses, and, you know, there's varying degrees of control that the Communist Party exercises over them, which is a really long conversation.
Okay.
But on Huawei, Huawei is the world's leading producer of 5G equipment. 5G is the fifth generation of wireless communications. It's the Internet of Things, which means that every device at your home and office, your car, your pacemaker, will all be connected to the Internet of Things. If Huawei builds the world's telecom backbone for 5G, it first of all will be able to steal all the world's data. And second of all, it very well may be able to manipulate those devices so as to drive your car off a cliff, turn up or speed or turn off or turn on your pacemaker,
right,
speed it up, or whatever is connected to the Internet of Things, which means that Huawei is a threat to us. And this is not a theoretical threat because Beijing has used Huawei equipment to surveil others. So they clearly are a danger to free societies.
So in a sense, the coronavirus is like they played their hand too fast, too soon.
I think so. That's a great way of putting it. They knew what they were doing. They had to know. I mean, I'm not saying that this started deliberately, but when they saw that the coronavirus had done to their country, they then took steps to make sure that it spread beyond China's borders. They knew this was human-to-human transmissible for 5 weeks or so, and they told the world it was not. They pressured countries to accept arrivals from China. They're the ones who carry the disease beyond China's borders. You put facts together, and you come to some unthinkable conclusions about what Beijing did. So this is an attack against all of humanity. And in fact, this is the first time that one country has attacked all the other countries in the world.
Yeah, I heard somebody put it that way, and that was also very sobering. Are you you must be keeping up on the Belt and Road Initiative? Are there any countries? I know there's one country that was basically saying, "No, take a hike, China. We're not buying. We're not dealing with you anymore." But China stands to gain a lot of power if it can basically foreclose loans, right?
Yeah, and they've done that, for instance, in Sri Lanka, where they have now basically own a port, Hambantota.
Mm.
And they also have a lot of sway over Colombo, which is the main port in Sri Lanka. Belt and Road is a complicated subject. I think China is certainly trying to take over the world's transportation routes. I think that it will fail, and I think that this will be a debacle for China because it's extended a lot of loans that countries can't pay back. And I think they're going to either take over a lot of infrastructure that is going to be useless because we're going into a period of deglobalization, or China will not be able to, it's going to lose a lot of money in many of these uneconomic investments. Again, an extremely complicated topic. Hmm.
Interesting that you say we're going into a period of deglobalization. What future do you see for China? And I'll just preface it with, I had a guest on who was talking about an idea that China was perhaps even going to balkanize, that the Communist Party, as it is today, couldn't survive this.
I don't think the Communist Party will survive. Mm. I've been wrong in the past on the timing of this, but I believe the party is fragile. China has, like a lot of other countries with unsustainable economic systems, they do well in periods of globalization because everybody does well. But the point is, in a period of deglobalization, in other words, cutting of trade links, I think they're exposed. As Warren Buffett said, you don't know who's swimming naked until the tide goes out.
Okay. That is a great note to end on. Before I let you go, Huawei is a Trojan horse.
Absolutely. Best way to put it.
Yeah.
Yes. Huawei is a Trojan horse.
Yeah. Fantastic. Well, Gordon Chang, I've been working hard to get you on the program for quite a while. I really appreciate you you calling in and finally me getting my phone to work properly. So thank you so much for coming on. It's great to speak with you.
Oh, it was great to speak with you, Sam, and thank you so much.
Yeah, and do follow Gordon Chang, Gordon G. Chang on Twitter, at Gordon G. Chang. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
All right. Huawei is a Trojan horse, okay? Hey, we've got this great, beautiful internet for you. It's fabulous. It's going to look stunning in your foyer. It's going to be great inside your castle. And then you let it in, and then all of a sudden you have all of these viruses wreaking havoc. And interestingly enough, a virus in your computer is arguably as bad as a virus in the environment. If you catch it and you happen to have something computerized that you're dealing with, your car, your pacemaker, your pain-killing device, your insulin pump. Very clever that Trump has now put that on the front burner. I'll just say. All right. Let's see. Doctors raising the alarm about the health effects of the continued coronavirus shutdown. They're calling it now a mass casualty incident. As you all know, I'm just sort of beside myself with this. I'm getting very frustrated with the destruction that I see. So more than 600 doctors signed on to a letter. They sent it to President Trump on Tuesday. They want to end the national shutdown. By the way, it was always aimed at slowing the spread of coronavirus, not keeping you safe. That was not the aim. See that, and that's what I struggle with, is because there's a logical leap, basically a leap over logic. They just leapt over it, did not consult logic. Okay. Because they used fear. And here's the problem. And I love this because up on Facebook, I put this up on Facebook because it's so clever. Somebody wrote in, I guess they just took the sheet, all right? It's a homework sheet. 312 times 23 equals X. You can go to my Facebook page to look at it. Under Common Core, you make a grid. And you put the 300 over one block and the 10 over another block and the 2 over a third block. That's 312 across the top. And then down the side, you put a 20 and a 3. That's the 23. And then you do all the multiplications into the grid, the 6-block grid. And then you add up all the numbers that you get and you come out with the answer. Or you could just do it the good old-fashioned way, which is the standard algorithm, which is 312 23 goes underneath it with the time sign and a line, and then you just multiply it out and add up your two. Anyway, it's silly. It's too easy the old way. So they had to complicate it. Why? Because they are actively trying to get people to be stupid about math. Why would they do that, you wonder? Because math is the language of logic. Math, in a sense, forces you to think logically. It trains your brain to think logically. Other things can do that also, but math is logic. And when you study logic, the actual discipline of logic, you see that even more clearly, because logic has equations. Now, English has equations too. That dog is brown. There's an equation. Dog equals brown, right? But not to the degree that math. A equals 6. You can't refute it. That's just the way that it is, right? And so on this page at the top with the Common Core workout of the problem, it says a little arrow in red, and it says before the pandemic. And then at the bottom, there's a little arrow for the standard algorithm, and it says after being homeschooled by an essential employee, hashtag, I don't have time to learn new things, which I love, because that is the secondary and desired. I will say desired, because I do believe that Common Core is nefarious. And next week, I'm going to do an entire episode devoted to the crap that's going on in our schools, because I've assembled a bit of it. I think that the secondary but fully embraced desired effect of Common Core is to distance the child from the parent. And what better way to do that than to show the child that the parent's dumb? I'm seeing more and more people saying that they're going to homeschool this fall, more and more. And what's great about it is homeschooling comes in lots of different flavors. It's not that you have to take the entire burden on yourself. You don't. All right, so there's an article up on Zero Hedge called The Silver Lining. And it starts like this. It's Robert Gore who wrote it. I don't know him, but... Oh, no, sorry. Well, that's interesting. It has two bylines, so I'm not even sure. I don't know. Ayn Rand wrote in Capitalism, "We are fast approaching the stage of the ultimate inversion, the stage where the government is free to do anything it pleases, while the citizens may act only by permission, which is the stage of the darkest periods of human history, the stage of rule by brute force." And so the question is, can we come back from that stage? Can we turn this Titanic around? Or are we going to run into the iceberg? In fact, the author of this article, who is either, I'll tell you, Tyler Durden, but it also says Robert Gore, so I'm not sure. We are no longer fast approaching the stage of the ultimate inversion. We've arrived. Welcome to the ultimate inversion. The stage of which every would-be dictator dreams. We're seeing that today. Did you see Garcetti, Mayor Garcetti of Los Angeles? Well, I played it. I played it on the air. Literally, wet sand is okay, but dry sand is a no-no. It's like, no, I won't go there. It's just, yeah. Science is anti-whim, he writes. Nature, as Francis Bacon observed, to be commanded must be obeyed. And nothing illustrates the ultimate inversion of the official coronavirus response better than its leaders' assault on science in the name of their science. And so to my Facebook friends, well, to my Facebook followers, whatever, I posted the scientific studies proving that masks are Useless. They're not useless, though. They're worse than useless. Projections are hypotheses, but only one class of hypotheses was officially accepted for this disaster. The disaster scenarios that fed panic and paved the way for further expansion of government's power. Well, who was promoting that? The government. And now there's this study, I have to go look it up again, that Democrat-run states are doing much better, are faring much better than, Democrat states are faring much worse than the Republican-run states in the aftermath, let's say. There's no science at all that supports social distancing. In fact, masks, because they're forcing you to rebreathe your own respiratory waste, they weaken your immune system. So they are actually advocating for things to get worse by insisting that you wear a mask. That's why I won't shop at Costco. I won't. They will not force me to wear a mask, so they don't get my money. No, I'll find somewhere else. I wonder if Sam's Club is forcing people to wear masks. Anyway, you can find me at samsorbo.com. You can email me there if you want. Refute me. Go right ahead. I'm willing to learn, by the way. Samsorbo.com. Go to the Facebook page, official Sam Sorbo Facebook page. Hey, thank you so much for joining me. This is the Sam Sorbo Show. Now go have a great rest of your weekend.
Star General Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.